This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in. It is Sharp Money here on VSIN. I'm Jeff Parles. Dustin, the regular crew is here. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. We're happy to be with you. Amal, how was your weekend, Amal? You have a good weekend?
I did. Thank you. Got out of town, but other than that, it was very good. Missed a little bit of the heat. And tell you what, a little disappointed we're hitting the baseball all-star break right now because the Padres are playing well. And by the way, Dustin and I were talking about Blake Snell, and man, this guy just continues to sizzle. Spencer Strider was great, but you know, we can talk about your Mets and Dustin's Mets.
I was going to say, Dustin legitimately walked in today. Got to give us some time to talk about Blake Snell, and you made it 30 seconds before mentioning Blake Snell.
Well, you know, I just want people to know who the National League Cy Young Award winner is going to be.
Right now, Snell, so when we were on the air on Friday, Snell was still, 18-1 on Friday still? And now he's down under 7-1, plus 650 at DK right now. And after watching him again, and this is not where we expected to start, but I'm good with going this year, Mo. There is no one on the planet who has been better than Blake Snell the last 2 months. No one. And we've seen guys like this come from way behind in order to win Cy Youngs. We saw it a few years ago with Robbie Ray, who was 100-1 in the middle of July, winning the AL Cy Young. 2015, Jake Arrieta had the epic 3-month stretch to take the NL Cy Young almost unanimously this year. This run by Snell is like Arrieta's in 2015, where Arrieta was unhittable for three months. Snell's on 2 months where he's unhittable right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at what he's been able to do, it's been outstanding. He was dominant. He worked around some situations the last couple of starts, done a great job. Tell you what, though, don't overlook Zach Gallen and Spencer Strider. Gallen was great. Kershaw's pitching extremely well. I still think, though, Blake Snell has a lot to overcome. He's got to continue this. His numbers are not bad. You know, when you look at the beginning of the year, he didn't get off to a bad start, Jeff. But to me, I think the thing is right now you've got these three guys that are ahead of him. And I don't like the way this award is kind of done in the sense that they're really, if you look at it objectively, nobody should be more than a 4-1 number at this point in time. These guys, all four should be about the same number.
I tend to agree with you. I tend to agree with you, Amal. And the one thing, there's detractions for all of them. Snell off to a bad start, but he's not that same guy anymore. Kershaw's hurt. Gallen can't pitch on the road. Strider strikes out of the world, but a little inconsistent. But we'll get into this a little further a little bit later. Also, Logan Webb had an amazing end to the first half yesterday, a complete game shutout against the Rockies to move himself to the same number as Marcus Stroman. Amal, I know this came out during your show on Friday, but as I let this marinate over the weekend, so the NBA is doing this European-style in-season tournament, and the betting implications of this, I don't think most people understand that there are going to be plenty of betting opportunities that are not normal to regular NBA betting. Because the way this format is going, it's all 30 teams are in this tournament, three groups of five in each conference, so six groups total. The games will be on Tuesday and Friday nights in the month of November. The winners of each group advance. The best non-group winner in each conference advances to the quarters. Then the quarters will be played in early December with the semifinals a few days after that on December 7th and the championship on December 9th here in Vegas. And Amal, you bet soccer. You know international soccer as well as anyone here at the network. The last day of Champions League, Europa League, Conference League is one of the squirreliest betting days on the calendar anywhere. And this can come to the NBA in-season tournament. And I don't think a lot of bettors who bet the NBA on a regular basis are going to be used to that type of thing, especially early, which could create some really interesting betting opportunities, at least on that final day of group stage.
You know, you're absolutely right, but I'll tell you one thing. When you look at outside of Champions League or maybe Europa for certain teams, you're not getting everyone fielding their best players and necessarily putting their best foot forward. And this is the one area I have concern. If you're an NBA team, I think there's supposed to be some financial prize pool here at the end of this thing.
There is, yes.
How much money are you giving Damian Lillard, LeBron James, and these guys to worry about this?
So here's what I'll say real quick. The younger team. So when we were talking about this yesterday, JVT and I on Live Bet Sunday, the younger teams that haven't won anything yet.
Right.
So the guys who are on lesser contracts, mm-hmm. the guys who haven't been deep in the playoffs. So let's take, you know, I know Sabonis just got paid.
Right.
And I know Fox got paid. But let's take Sacramento, okay?
Yep.
A young team that finally got back in the playoffs for the first time in forever last year. And they didn't never, this group hasn't won a playoff series. Proving to the league, all right, you know what? We want to try in this thing. We want to win this thing. We want to prove we're one of the better teams in this league. This is a really good spot in order to do this. The other teams like that would also be good in this are the teams that are borderline playoff teams. Because remember, these games in group play count as regular season games them all. So for like, let's look at the Eastern Conference, for the likes of Indiana, for the likes of Brooklyn, for the likes of those teams that are borderline playoff teams, they're going to be taking these games more seriously than the Celtics, the Sixers, who are teams that, look, they're going to be in the playoffs anyway, you slice it them all. But this game in December made me more into Brooklyn because, A, it's a tournament game, and, B, it might keep them out of a play-in spot.
Yeah, maybe you're right about that. I just, look, I'm not a fan of this. I actually think the FA Cup in Europe sucks in England. I think it's terrible. I mean, you see the second team that Man City fields in there. You see the same thing United does. You see it with Chelsea. You see it with all these high-level teams in England, not necessarily putting their best foot forward, even when they're in the championship. So I'm not necessarily a big fan of this. Look, I'm looking at the payouts right now. Playing players on winning team championship, $500,000 each. Yeah. That's a good payout. Okay, losing team, $200,000, another solid payout. But players in the semis, $100,000 each. Losing team, quarterfinals, $50,000 each. $50,000. I mean, have you actually looked at the breakdown of how much money these guys make? Anthony Edwards is going to make $1 million a week next year. Do you really think he's even going to notice this kind of money? I mean, all I'm saying is, what is the problem? If your league is that bad, then you should do something about it. Because that tells me that you think your league during the regular season is that bad. There's always been a solution that everyone's talked about for a long time, and I think it's the most prudent one. Start the NBA on Christmas Day. You know, you got to give up about 25 to 30 games, but then you would actually get engagement in it. You're trying to go up against the biggest gorilla in sports, which is the NFL. You're not going to beat it. But to me, I don't think, where are you going to get this interest? Why? Because you get a free trip to Vegas? I want to see. Actually, I hope a couple guys get arrested. It'll make it more interesting.
So I got to counter you here real quick. So this is not for the person who's watching the NBA every night. We know this. It's not for...
You think it's getting the guy who's only watching in June?
I think it could get the guy who's only watching in June for those Saturday, for those semifinals and finals, and for those quarterfinals. Because again, Amal, we live in a society where people like the shiny object. And even though that NBA Cup looks ridiculous, it is a horrible trophy. It's a horrible looking trophy. It is still technically a shiny object. And it's something that people are going to pay attention to. And also the one thing with the way that the semifinals and finals got scheduled, they scheduled it not against the conference championship weeks in college football. They scheduled it against Army-Navy, which will be earlier in the day on that Saturday on the 9th.
Right.
So they will be able to have basically, and the NFL doesn't have Saturday games yet. There's no bowl games.
Correct.
They will have a monopoly and on the sports watching calendar on December the 9th.
You're not wrong, but you know what the rest of us do, and you're one of them, and I know Dustin's one of these guys because we're all watching college football since the last Saturday in August.
You take it off.
You take it off because you know the bowl games are the next weekend or the following weekend. I'm not worried about some NBA play-in tournament that has no determination in terms of what's going to happen in the big picture of the NBA season. I'll give you a perfect example. If you go to Europe and you ask, when did Chelsea win the Champions League, right? When Didier Drogba beat Bayern in Munich, you can remember that one if you're a Chelsea fan. When did they win the FA Cup, you'd have to sit there and be like, I don't know. Nobody cares about this. Listen, let me tell you something. The NBA needs to get rid of their two commissioners, LeBron James and Adam Silver.
You promoted LeBron to commissioner?
Oh, he's always been the commissioner.
You promoted him again?
You think they were coming back in the bubble if it weren't for LeBron?
Oh, man. Doesn't the bubble feel like it was 25 years ago now?
I don't know. I didn't watch much of it, thank God. But, you know, they dominate May and June, right? You know, this is part of the problem with the NBA. You have a postseason. We talked about this all the time on the show. You play these games in the playoffs. You have teams playing back-to-backs during the regular season. Then the playoffs, you're like, hey, listen, we'll play you on Monday.
And we'll play you on Friday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, what are they doing?
So here, the one last thing I will say with this, Amal, because I'm a fan of trying new things. And they're not going to be one and done with this. They've committed to this for a few years now. They're not going for the guys that are 40s or older. They're not going for that. They're going for the younger gen. here to get more interest in December. I don't think there's any problem with going for the more casual fan. I get that I get college football bettors. You're right. You're 100% right. That Army-Navy day is a big relief because it's one game to handicap, not 100 games to handicap. I agree with you. But one extra game, and especially for us living here, nice little carrot at the end of the day for us to go to this game potentially.
Are you going
to
go?
I plan on it. Especially.
Well, you can let me know.
Don't give me that look.
You can
don't
let me know
me
how
look,
it is,
Swadelson.
Jeff.
Don't give it a look.
This thing is going to happen, and you're going to be like, you know what? There's too many other things going on that I care about in my own life. This is dumb.
The tournament's dumb or the finals?
This
dumb?
Is just the whole thing is
the whole
dumb.
Thing. Yeah. So you and them all are
irrelevant. We're going to start putting, like, as an accomplishment for people, like, on their Hall of Fame placards.
In-season tournament MVP.
In-season tournament champion.
100%.
There's one trophy you play for, and it's named after a guy named Larry O'Brien. I don't even know who he was. I just know it's his trophy, and it's the only one that matters in the association.
Yeah, I saw the WNBA ratings exploded with the Commissioner's Cup. I'm being completely facetious.
So tell me.
I know you are.
Why are we playing this tournament? Why does it matter?
It matters to get a new audience in, which, again, yes, there will be a new audience.
It's the only global American sport. It's
very well said.
That is true. I'll give you that. Well, technically hockey is, but we know how it breaks down. All right. That was a fun start to the show. More to get to. We're going to the Home Run Derby. I think the winner's coming from one specific matchup. We'll talk about it next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to get in on the fantasy action, but sick of managing your roster, sick of player injuries ending your season? With best ball at DraftKings, you get the best of your team all season long. This year, best ball on DraftKings is bigger than ever with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. For a limited time, you can join DraftKings' largest best ball contest ever and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Act now before this offer expires. To start playing best ball, download the DraftKings app today and use the code SHARP. That's SHARP. Enter DraftKings best ball millionaire contest and snake your team today for the upcoming season. Again, each week you'll automatically rack up points from all your scores. No ads, drops, or I should have played. Again, taking a shot at the top prize, $1 million for the team with the most points at the end of the season. What are you waiting for? Head to DraftKings right now. Sign up with the code SHARP and start playing best ball today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued is $10. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. Welcome back in. It's Sharp Money. I'm Jeff Parles. Dustin Swadelson's here. Amal Shaw is here. I always like playing the heel. I always like playing the heel like I did in that first segment. That's usually your role, Amal.
No, I'm not. Listen, I'm not.
No, he was still the bad guy in the conversation.
Doesn't matter. It's fine. It makes no difference to me. But here's the thing. I'm not going to do that just to do that, right? Like, you just say what you think. If you disagree with it, it's fine. I mean, we can move on from this, but I just don't think it's going to be anything that benefits the NBA overall.
It won't be. Dustin was shaking his head the whole time and then came in.
I'm offended by it. I think it's offensive. I think it's an offensive thing to do to the people who supposedly care about your sport. You're playing games that are irrelevant. Like, yeah. I know they matter for the record still, but you're doing this little dog and pony show, and there's no real point to it other than there's a bonus and a different trophy. I don't understand the point of it.
The trophy is so bad, by the way. The trophy is so bad.
Look, if you genuinely want to improve the league, here's what you do. But the problem is the players would have to take a bit of a pay cut. You reduce the number of games from 82. What do we have? 30 teams in the NBA, 60
something.
Right? So what are there? 60 teams in the league? I mean, 30 teams. 30 teams,
yeah,
exactly.
30 in the league.
So here's what you do. You play 58 games, and everybody plays one home and away. So everybody gets to see every player like they already do, but just you make it one home, one away, and you start the season later. But it'll hurt you from a television standpoint, and it'll hurt you from a ticket sales standpoint. However, think about how competitive the league would be if it's a 58-game schedule. Then all of a sudden, the intensity. Part of the problem that hurts the NBA is when you watch games in November and December, the argument is people don't care, meaning the players don't care. And the fans don't care either because there's the lack of effort in those games. I don't think they'll ever do it because nobody wants to relinquish money. But it, to me, it would be the most prudent way to make your sport more effective. Think about why college football and the NFL are so popular, because it's such a small number of games. You can, like in college football, you can't have two slip-ups, right? You can lose once, and then the rest of the season, you're on thin ice. In the NFL, you can lose a few games, but still, that 17-game schedule puts you in a situation where you've got to be very effective. It's not like baseball, where you can have a Tampa Bay Rays 6-7-game losing streak. Nobody even think anything about it as you're sitting in first place.
I can't really argue it. By the way, I will say the optimal NBA thing would be, Amal, for me.
Yeah.
Dip it to 72, from 82 to 72. Play everyone in the opposite conference twice. Play everyone in your own conference three times. I think that would actually help things because, again.
Wait, you play every – do it again one
time? So you go – there's 15 in each conference.
Yeah.
Three times 14 is 42.
Right, and then you play everyone else twice?
Yes. You play the other conference 15 – times 2, 30, 72. I think that would work perfectly.
And contract four teams.
Well, that will never happen.
That will never happen.
That will never. That's less likely to happen than the season getting cut down.
Yeah, exactly. No, that would never happen because they'd have to pay those owners out, right?
We're not the 2002.
He's not wrong.
We're not the 2002 Montreal Expos.
Well, they didn't get contracted. They got
almost,
moved.
Though.
They got moved. But, I mean, if we're being real, when you look around the league, some of these rosters, when you get deep, like – three guys off the bench, gets real translucent.
Well, again, if anything, it's going to turn into a 32-team league because Seattle and Vegas are going to get new teams probably in the next 5 years.
How are they going to do two West Coast teams, though? That's another thing. Get rid of the conferences.
Well, look, the only sport that I think should have conferences, well, I'm okay with baseball keeping the AL and the NL just for traditional sake, but get rid of the divisions. I've been on that for a while. And the NFL needs it because of the way the schedule is structured.
Yes.
Hockey does not need it, and the NBA doesn't need it. So you and I are in agreement there. I think they've said that they would just shift Memphis and New Orleans to the east and put the other two teams in the west.
Makes sense.
Geographically speaking, that makes sense.
Look,
you've had enough of this conversation.
I really have.
All right.
Third hour Amal in the first hour.
Let's go to a conversation that I know you have a lot to say about too, Amal.
College
and that's
football?
The home run. And that's the home run derby.
You don't like the home run derby?
Can't even tell you last time I
watched
it.
Of the non actual game events, it's this or the 3-point contest.
3-point shootout would be the best, but I think the last time I probably watched it was when Larry Bird won it.
But by the way, I will say this on the 3-point contest.
Hold on a second.
Go ahead, Amal.
No. I apologize, Jeff. No, please explain.
I had a big bet on Joe Harris a couple years ago in the 3-point contest. I think there are bets to be made in both.
I'm not saying they're not. Why would I sit there and bet this when I know Blake Snell, when I know I can get Joe Musgrove against Max Scherzer plus 162 on the run line?
It goes with the common theme generally that I've found with you and working with you. Is there are a lot of things you like, and there's a lot of things you dislike, but there's nothing you dislike more than fun. And this is fun.
I got to give him credit for the line. That was pretty good. I got to give him that one. But I disagree on his overall assertion.
If you go on the DK menu, they have total home runs. Home runs. Longest home runs.
What is it, 484 feet?
490 and a half.
It's gone up because I saw here in Vegas it was 484 at William Hill, and I researched it. The problem was majority of those long home runs were either hit at Coors or it was hit by Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge.
That makes a lot of sense.
And this year is at T-Mobile,
it's
right?
Not a good Hold ballpark up. To hit homers
in. And we're in Seattle, right?
Yeah. Correct.
And I looked up the longest home run hit in Seattle was like 456.
It's a very big pitcher's park, deep gaps. Also, I would say the field – like, I think Pete Alonso, Jeff, you and I watch him a lot. He's the most deceptive player in the field because he's a line drive hitter.
He's awesome at this event, though.
No, but the reason he's great at this event is because he has so much pure power, he can miss pitches and still hit them for homers.
A couple things. First of all, I know you're shocked by all the information I had on the home run derby.
Considering you hate it.
Yeah.
I would love to hear you talk about something you like in the research you have on that.
Well, when we get to Georgia this week on college football, I'm ready to go. But, you know, here's the thing. It was interesting because I saw that 484 and I thought, I had no idea. Is that long or short? I had no clue. So I started looking up and I looked up the longest home runs hit and at Seattle.
This includes like Bonds too for home run derbies? Like what did he do? There were Baltimore, a couple more like Ken Griffey in Baltimore off the building? Like
that was 493.
Was it 493?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they have the outline of the ball on the warehouse on Utah Street still.
I think that first of all, in these bets, you can take the long shot. Because remember, you're facing your selected pitcher. These guys can all hit the ball out of the park. You don't have to hit it 500 feet. You just got to get it over the fence.
Speaking of, Pete Alonso has done this with two other people. He's doing it this year with his former high school or middle school assistant coach.
Yeah.
So third different guy throwing him balls here. So we'll see how that plays out. There's no value in betting him at 310, though.
No.
You can't do it.
Even though I will say, Dustin, the winner of this event is coming, at least to me, the winner of this event's coming from the winner of Alonso and Julio Rodriguez in round one.
Well, I think it makes sense because Rodriguez knows the ballpark.
Rodriguez knows the ballpark. He was really good in it last year. Alonso is the one guy who is close to perfecting this thing. I think the winner of this is coming out of it. And I agree with Amal's assertion that taking a long shot is good here. I have no problem if you want to put some pizza money on Adley Rutschman. I have no idea what it's going to look like for him in this event, but I don't mind taking a shot on a long shot in this event.
As a pizza expert, I can tell you, though, it depends on where you're purchasing your pizza because it can vary in pricing from getting robbed at the Strip to a normal joint around town where you're not getting ripped off. So it depends on where you're going. But here's the thing I would eliminate. I would not take a left-hander in this one. 381 down the line in right center. I'm sorry, in right center and, mm-hmm. and center is 401. But left field is 331. That's a little bit of a shorter porch.
So
there.
You would go with either Mookie or Rosarena at the double digits.
I actually like some for if we're going long shots, either Adolis Garcia or Rosarena from that matchup. I think they
no
both,
problem with that.
And I think Hold there's on. A stamina aspect to this, which is why I'm That's fading key. Vlad, and he's a bigger player.
I don't understand how he's 190.
190 pounds?
No, plus 190.
Oh, he's plus 190 to make the finals.
Yeah, the finals. Yeah,
I know,
yeah.
But he should not be the second favorite necessarily. I apologize, Dustin, but real quick, I want to correct something I said. The right field wall here is 326.
Right field's 326?
326, 381 to right center, 401 to dead center, 378 to left center, and 331 to right left field.
It's the Julio Rodriguez angle makes sense.
Those are the two. I can't bet either of them because all the value sucked out of both of them. But those would be the only two guys that I'd even look at.
Rosarena was the guy. I just think he's got something. He's got a flair.
He definitely is a flair. There's no arguing that. We're going to continue the baseball talk. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but we'll get back to the NL Cy Young, even the AL Cy Young. That's next. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in Sharp Money here on VSIN. I'm Jeff Parles. I'm Amal Shaw. Dustin Sweetelson here as well. 66% of the regular crew here on Monday, the 10th of July. And now joining us live from just down the road here in Vegas. Find his work over at Bleacher Report and The Athletic as well. It is Mo DeKeel with us right now. Mo, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, but I've been in Vegas for a while. I don't know how you guys live here. That's hard.
Well, you talk about hold on a second. Are you talking about because of the heat, or what are you talking about?
No, just Vegas. Vegas.
Oh, just
itself.
Vegas in general. Well, look.
And I get it, because you guys probably don't hit the Strip and all that stuff, but like I'm here until Thursday, and it's rough.
I'm on the Strip about six nights a week.
Okay, well, good luck. I don't know how you do it.
I think my biggest advantage is I don't drink.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, that's
definitely helps. But tables are a problem, too.
Oh, that's
Mo, it takes a special breed. That's yeah, all I'll sure. say. It takes a special breed to survive and not be broke quickly here in this city. Mo, let's get to some basketball, though. Of course, summer league going on. Wembanyama is getting shut down for the rest of the summer now. No shock there. But Mo, after what we've seen through two games, I know Twitter got all crazy after his lackluster shooting performance in game one. But what we saw last night is more what we expected from the first overall pick, and That's all we needed to see from here, him here in Vegas.
I mean, exactly. There wasn't much more than that. We saw everything of his offensive game. We saw him off the dribble, you know, in between the legs to a dribble to a mid-range pull-up for a 7'5" guy is pretty absurd, and it looked smooth. We saw him crash the offensive glass, run in transition, got some post-ups. We saw a whole bunch of different things from him. I thought, like, this was the game where it was like, okay, now he's comfortable, excited, exciting for everybody else. But that first game, that was not Victor Wembanyama. I don't know what we're going to think he is or whatnot, but that game was just such a shell of himself. And then the ironic thing was he was still really good defensively in that game. And I think that was kind of the absurdity of it all.
A few things, Mo. First of all, I love the screen you have behind you, which is like the old chalkboard. You see the coach's board on the side. But the reason why I like it so much is you have the very narrow spacing on the sidelines of the three-point shot. That's amazing. We see how many guys step out of bounds every time. It drives me insane. And Mo's background is exactly like that. You mentioned Victor. The one thing to me I thought was a little bit over the top was the criticism on a shooting performance. It's one game. It's an outlier. I thought what we saw in game two is what we're going to expect to see more out of him. You know, he's able to, with his length and size, create problems defensively, alter shots, block shots, offensively get rebounds, and he's got a beautiful touch. We saw it on three-point shots, some of the face-up jumpers. I think this kid's going to be all-world. From your perspective, and forget the two games, just from maybe what you saw from a scouting standpoint overall, how would you compare him to as a prospect to a LeBron James or anybody else that you hold in that high esteem?
You know, it's just so hard to compare him to anybody because he's such a freak almost in that sense. And the way he plays, it's a cross of Kevin Durant on the offensive end, you know, with a little bit of, you know, post game to all of those things. Then it's a, you know, Rudy Gobert, actually, I would say a Giannis like defender. You know, I think he's going to be a menace on the weak side. The way Milwaukee uses Giannis rotating over to block shots, I think that's going to be the best way to use Victor defensively. But like, so a cross of Giannis and Kevin Durant, like, that's terrifying, you know, and it's a package that's 7'5" that moves well, is very fluid. We know he's got to put on weight, but also, like, he's 19. People need to relax with all of that stuff where they say, you know, he's too skinny and things like that. He'll grow into his body a little bit. And at 7'5", he probably needs a little more time to grow into that body. But I think he'll put on some muscle there and continue to kind of go forward. I just think that it's going to be an unbelievable sort of rise for him. But I think it'll be slow. I don't think it's something we're going to see right out of the gate. I think, you know, through the first couple months of the season, we might even have some points where we're a little bit disappointed.
Mo, what you've watched this week so far at the Summer League, who are some other guys that are under the radar, not one of those top picks or premium second-year guys that have come out and played this week in Vegas that have stood out to you that you think can make instant impact, whether it's on good teams or guys who are just going to fit into rotations filling out rosters?
Yeah, I think Andre Jackson with Milwaukee, I think he's really an interesting prospect for them, a little bit youthful, athleticism, bouncy, can defend really aggressively and things like that. I think a little bit of just a boost of energy is something that Milwaukee's going to need. Now, the problem is he can't shoot, but, you know, I think, you know, he does a lot of other things well, and I think he'll be able to help them, at least in the regular season, kind of bring some excitement to everything that they have going on. And then Utah with Keontae George, who, you know, I think he's going to be explosive, can attack the rim, is very aggressive. I think that's a great pickup for Utah. I think he's another guy that's a little bit under the radar that we should be really excited about.
You're absolutely right. I thought I liked him a lot coming out of Baylor. I thought this kid was going to be really, really good, to be one guy to pay attention to. The play-in tournament, fan, neutral, or think it's great?
Neutral for now. I that shifted from being way against it. Like, I had my pitchfork ready to go. Like, I was ready to, you know, go after Adam Silver. I hated the idea. But when it became just, hey, we're only adding two more games to the guy's schedule, it's built into the regular season, now I'm kind of okay with it. And it's, you know what, if it brings more fans' excitement to the game, that's the most important thing. Whether I like it or not doesn't matter. It's the fans. I'm going to watch all of these games regardless. You guys know that. I'm a degenerate in that sense. I'm just going to watch some of the worst basketball games in the world that nobody else will watch, and I'll be like, no, but that sideline out-of-bounds play was phenomenal. This isn't necessarily for me. It's for the fans. And if it brings excitement and brings juice, and if the players buy into it, I think this is something that might be able to last for a while.
Well, Mo, that's the thing that I'm looking at here, where I think it's going to be selective on the team buy-in. Like, a team like Sacramento, to me, I think is going to fully buy in. A team that finally gets back in the playoffs after all those years and now in a winnable group after not making it out of round one to prove, hey, we're a real competitor in this league. We're going to show you in this. And, Mo, also for teams like Indiana in the Eastern Conference side, maybe not in Brooklyn, not quite stable playoff teams, but you know what? Those games matter for us in order to avoid the play-in games in April. I think those are the teams that are really going to take full advantage of this.
Yeah, and I think the more important thing, too, is it's kind of like a high-stakes game in the sense of like a little bit more pressure. You're going to go play in Vegas, and if you're in the quarterfinals and there's a little bit more pressure to it, it's almost like, I don't want to say it's playoffs intensity, but it's going to be a little bit more than a regular season game, hopefully. And that's the idea of it. And I think that's something that might be an advantage for some of those teams. And I think the most important thing for the NBA, forget getting buy-in from guys like LeBron and Kevin Durant and those guys. You need to get the buy-in from the younger players because they're the ones that are going to have to play in this for the next 6, 7, 8 years. And you want to make sure they're excited each time to jump into this, and that will get everybody else going.
Mo, when you look at the offseason and the free agency moves, anything that has impressed you that you like, dislike?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I can go on a whole long list of what I liked and didn't like, but I think the Lakers and the Suns did really well. I think the Warriors did really well. I'm excited to watch Chris Paul with them, which is still going to be very weird when I first see it, but it'll be something I think he can help the second unit a lot, picking up Dario Saric. I thought the Lakers just making marginal moves around the edges, I thought were really good and smart moves. I thought the Suns did really well with the limited resources that they had to just kind of build a roster out, and I think they're pretty excited. In terms of a team that I just scratching my head at, I'm just looking at Toronto and just poking them with the stick going like, you know, do something.
I would agree with you on the Raptors. It just seems like I'm not sure what they're doing at this point in time. I want to go back to the Lakers for a second. In your opinion, are they a team that's closer to the Western Conference Finals? Even though they got swept by Denver, they were right there. Or are they a team that's somewhere in between what their regular season was and where they wound up in the postseason?
Yeah, it's so difficult just because, like, you know, their whole regular season, let's just be honest, we only should judge them from when they after they traded Westbrook, and that was their real team and their real roster the rest of the way. I think that's a top five team in the Western Conference, but we also have to just acknowledge the fact that the entire Western Conference is going to be absurd. You know, when you just look down the list of teams that made the playoffs, it's, okay, who's dropping out? Well, Oklahoma City is going to climb up, too. What are we going to do? What's going to happen with New Orleans and all of those things? So it's really difficult to kind of project that stuff, but I think they're right there in the top five.
Mo, Joe Cronin, of course, the GM over in Portland, just having a press conference that just wrapped up. Here's something he said on the Damian Lillard potential trade. We're going to be patient. If it takes months, it takes months. This feels like now, with that quote especially and everything that has been said over the last week, we are now squarely in a Kevin Durant 2.0 scenario with Lillard and the Portland Trail Blazers.
Yeah, I just don't. But the difference is I just don't think Dame's coming back. And we can have that whole discussion of all the billion different things that are talked about it. I just think if you're Portland, you want to start the season with a clean slate. Turn this stuff over to Scoop. Turn it over to Simons and to Sharp and just start with a clean slate and go to work there and allow those guys to be able to have full training camps and attack and understand their roles. When you bring Dame in, it becomes a little bit more difficult and challenging with that. It can take months, but for me, it's got to get done before training camp.
Mo, where is in a one-word answer here, where is he on opening night then if it's not Portland?
Miami.
Quarters on the dollar, nickels on the dollar, doesn't matter.
It might be a three-team trade, might be a four-team trade, but it'll expand in that sense. I don't think it'll just be a straight-up trade between the two of them.
Lillard right now minus 275 at DraftKings to start next season, plays first minute with the Miami Heat. He's Mo DeKeel. You can find him over at Bleacher Report, The Athletic, on the tweets at Mo_DeKeel_NBA. Mo, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for hopping on with us today.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. Hopefully I'll survive the rest of the trip.
Good luck. We have faith in you, Mo. We have faith. Coming up next, we're heading over to the NFL. Three-point stance, including Dalvin Cook, still available. That's next. Sharp Money.
is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in. It's Sharp Money here on VSIN. I'm Jeff Parles. Amal Shaw's here. Dustin Sweetelson's here. And now in studio, it looked like he was bringing his lunch in, but instead it's going to be bestsellers with Steve Fezzik at some point during this next hour. It is our guy, Steve Fezzik, with
Congratulations are in order. I heard that all went very well in St. Louis.
Yes.
So you are a married man and fantastic.
Yes, yeah. I the wedding was great. The honeymoon was great. Wishnev gave us a perfect 10 on the wedding, which is, our friend Todd Wishnev.
Hard to please.
Can be a fickle fella, and he had a great time.
Outstanding. Yes, so I heard.
Yeah, but thank you again, Steve. It's been a very fun 6 weeks. So
now
far.
Todd has to figure out how to get back to St. Louis to cash the tickets that he snuck in at the kiosks there.
He got some in at the kiosks. I know
that. Can't mail them in?
It's open to discussion. Yes.
Oh, no, please expand upon that.
Well, when you mail them in, you should be able to, but that now you're disclosing who you are and that you are living in. What's a Pennsylvania better doing betting in St. Louis? And so it's like putting up a big, hey, I'm a guy you probably don't want to let bet, you know, going forward.
A trip from, because Missouri is one of the states that has been lagging to get sports betting legal across the river. East St. Louis, where he had to go. All right, Steve, let's go into this. And this is, I always love talking to you because we can go anywhere. The summer league's in town now. And you walked in and said, you know what, this could be a pretty good niche thing for bettors, especially if you're in town able to watch the games. Which obviously you have the opportunity to do that if you're in Las Vegas right now.
Yeah, so the vast majority of people, they want to win. They're betting sports, and they focus on things like NBA sides, NFL sides, where you can bet $5,000, $10,000 a pop. It's very hard to win. The market is very efficient. It's the wrong approach. You want to take sports like the WNBA, like the Summer League, and really focus on those with the lower limits. Well, what do you care? If you're betting $300 a game, you don't need to bet something that it has a $3,000 limit and find softness in the market. The reason I don't personally bet it is that the limits are a little bit too low for me to make significant money or lose significant money. And I don't think it's a good usage of my time because you blink a few weeks later, it's done with. And now, I'm a couple weeks closer to college football where I didn't get my bets in and someone beat me to UTSA plus 2.5 because against Houston because I was too busy screwing around with the summer league. You can't be in all places at all times.
You brought up a great point in terms of kind of allocating your time. And the summer league is such a small, finite amount of games. And you, again, as you alluded to, you really can't bet it heavily. So it would be kind of a waste of time for you. You mentioned in terms of looking at, you gave a quick example, UTSA and Houston. But from your perspective, what's kind of the longest amount of time you're potentially willing to make a bet in advance of the event taking place for you?
Probably 12 months.
Okay.
Beyond that point. Yeah, and it gets messy also. I work with some other people. For instance, I work with Todd, on some things. The accounting becomes a nightmare when you're working with guys and like, hey, Jeff, can you get me down on a week 16 NFL bet? And then it would carry the accounting. And then, you can see how, I completely forgot about that. Or the ticket gets lost and the like. And I argue with people and they're like, oh, these syndicates, they have this all handled. They're all organized. Believe me, I've worked with plenty of betting syndicates. We basically tore our hair out trying to allocate because we'd have four of us would be in and maybe someone leaves in October. How are we going to handle all these pending bets and the like when we're, trying to get a divorce at that point from one of our members, et cetera.
I'm just impressed the fact that you can find enough people that you deem to be ethical enough, because I know in legal businesses, I've seen people try and cheat where it's in black and white on contracts and you wind up in court. So I'm a little bit surprised in an area where it's so cash driven, where people can be fly by night. I'm impressed by that.
What is it? Shakespeare said, neither a lender or a borrower be. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is, I would strongly encourage everyone, if you have someone coming to you saying, hey, I want to partner with you, I've got a lot going for me, but I don't have any capital, you've seen this with poker players all
sure,
the time.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, you know why they don't have any capital? Because they do stupid things like they go out when they win $20,000 in a tournament and blow $4,000, 3 hours after the tournament's over. And even if you have you're a plus EV poker player, it's not going to translate into any funds for that person.
To his point, I remember hearing a story one time, a guy won a big tournament at the Bellagio, it was like over $1 million. He didn't make it through the weekend.
When Stewie Unger won, and Nolan Dollar wrote the book One of a Kind. It's a great book. Mm-hmm. I brought in some books. And he was talking about how he won one of his World Series of Poker, and I think Billy Baxter staked him. So he got half of a million. So he got $500,000. He didn't have an ID, so he couldn't get any money. And he's like, I need some walking around money. And Baxter said, well, okay, here's $5,000. He's like, oh, I need a minimum of $50,000. What are you talking about?
Oh, man. Steve, of course, we're 2 months away from the NFL season, 6 weeks away from the college football season. And, of course, part of the reason that you're mentioning, hey, I'm going to stay away from the summer league is, like you said, I don't want to get beat to a punch on a game that's in 6 weeks from now or even further down the line. Just going through that and going through all these NFL games, like you said, it's hard to keep it straight. How do you keep this thing completely straight?
I don't. I mean, there's lots of bets I made. I don't even remember that I bet. And just, you know, just to pull back the curtain, and we hear it all the time, pros bet numbers. You know, we don't bet teams. And just by example, I was talking to my friend Brad Powers, who I know comes on the show all the time. So Brad laid six on Minnesota against Nebraska. Like that bet. I took eight with Minnesota. I like that bet. And you know what? Neither one of us dislikes the other's bet at all, to the point where I actually just texted him and said, I'll be willing to trade you some plus eight on the Gophers. Current line 7.2. He's got the better number. He's got the minus six. I said, I'll give you 3 shares of Minnesota plus eight for 2 shares of I'm sorry, Minnesota minus six. I'm trying to acquire Minnesota minus six and give back him some Minnesota plus eight. So just the way pros work.
Well, hold on 1 second. You said Minnesota plus eight? I'm sorry.
Minnesota minus six. Nebraska plus eight. See, plus eight. Nebraska, yes. Nebraska's bad. They've always been bad. But they're adept at losing close games.
Correct.
Maybe that'll change under Todd Rule. But I could easily, a bold prediction, Minnesota will win this game 24-17. And every bet will.
Everyone gets home.
There you go.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic if it works out that way. I want to ask you a question, and not necessarily directed towards what your personal situation is. For somebody, let's say they want to do this for a living. From just a general standpoint, if they're going to be betting sports, not taking part in playing blackjack or other things like that, slot machines, what would you say is kind of a bankroll that they would need theoretically, and how do you divide out, like, okay, you've got to pay rent, you've got to do other things. How do you kind of divvy those things up?
100,000.
Okay.
100,000 is the magic number, and you're not going to get there. So remember, you can only bet like 3% of your bankroll on plays. Where do I get the 3%? If you hit 54%, people say, oh, pros hit 55 to 60%. Well, they might hit that on pitcher strikeout props, but I assure you, betting the NBA, the NFL, any pro is going to be happy hitting 54%. So that's like a 3% ROI. So Kelly Criterion says if I bet more than 3% of my bankroll, well, I'm going to go bankrupt. So I got to be careful. So I'm betting $3,000. That sounds like a huge bet. But now wait a minute. If I bet $3,000 and I'm a 3% ROI every time I do that, that's worth what, $90. You know, it's going to take a lot of bets to be able to like live comfortably, you know, off of that. So you're probably going to have to supplement it. The best way to supplement it is with softer prop bets and the like, and specialize on some props where you just know more. I'll use an example. South Point used to put up punts. How many punts will there be in a game? And it's just one of many offerings. They didn't know how to price it. So I would routinely bet the Sunday night and Monday night, you know, punt props here.
What, for example, you based it on the percentage of winning about 53-54%, and you're saying no more than 3% on a bankroll bet. But over the course of a year, now, how many games are you projecting that type of bettor to wager on, just in theory?
Oh, it can be hundreds in a day. If you're live wagering, you know, throughout a day, I mean, if you're doing all the props and the like, and that's just a guideline. So
sure,
as far as the 3%, I spoke with Gil Alexander, for instance, on his show about, I bet a prop before the season started, will any team lose 100 games in MLB? And the last 3 years, each and every year, four teams have lost 100 games. It's a have and have not league. So I thought this bet was going to win 95% of the time, and I'm laying like minus 300, minus 350. You know, it's fine to bet, if you can find the money, to bet way more than 3% on bankroll on something that's going to win 95% of the time, provided you can estimate your edge. And that's a hard thing for many people to do, including myself.
Well, I love the example you just gave there, because Dustin and I were talking about this last week. I think sometimes one of the things that drives me nuts in this space is people say, oh, there's no value in this. To me, if there's a bet and it's minus $4, like the Oakland A's are going to lose about 120 games, maybe 115, whatever. They're going to fly over the 100 loss mark. I don't equate that bet at minus 350 as the same as a money line on NFL Sunday to another bet at minus 350. And that's why I think the point you made is extremely well made in the sense that you bet more on it. I think that sometimes gets overlooked. People are too fearful. To me, I'd rather take a minus 350 bet that I'm extremely confident in than some money line on a Sunday that you think has got a chance to win.
Of course, I am the guy that got annihilated betting Purdue on the money line. So let me disclose that. No. But you know what? I've more than made that back. I mean, it's well documented. And what? Frankly, I bet almost every number one seed in the NCAA tournament my entire life, you know, laying it. It used to be better. It used to be you could lay 20 to make a dollar. You know, and they're what? They're 165-2 now. I've done just fine.
No, my only objection to your bet on the Purdue one was twofold. Number one, I thought Purdue was the only one seed that could potentially lose based on their style of play. And then the second thing was potentially you could get 4-1 seeds at minus $7 to win all their games. So that, in essence, yes, Alabama, Kansas, and Houston potentially might have been a risk. That's the only objection I would have on that. I get where you're coming from, though.
Yeah, spot on. And, you know, in retrospect, you got to learn. You know, I look back on that and I was like, I was lazy. I was like, yeah, this always has worked. I don't care about the one seed. I just need an NCAA team that's going to be laying more than 21 points, which Purdue was. And I should have done more of my homework and said, this is a high volatile team that has had a long history of crumbling like 3-day-old cake in close games down the stretch.
It is amazing. They are a team that's made the Sweet 16 three straight years, or made the Sweet 16 two years ago, but 3 years in a row of arguably the worst losses ever put together in the NCAA tournament. Steve Fezzik's with us here on Sharp Money. We got a lot to get to, including his reading list over on the other side of the desk. That's coming up on Sharp Money.